This is an extemporaneous Christian Science prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The topic of this prayer treatment is plank number 19 of 32, and all 32 planks are detailed in the pages from the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, from pages 330 to 340. The topic to this plank number 19, Soul and Spirit One. The original text is in prose format and is as follows. Soul and spirit being one, God and soul are one. And this one never included in a limited mind or a limited body. Spirit is eternal, divine. Nothing but spirit, soul, can evolve life, for spirit is more than all else. Because soul is immortal, it does not exist in mortality. Soul must be incorporeal to be spirit, for spirit is not finite. Only by losing the false sense of soul can we gain the eternal unfolding of life as immortality brought to light. I shall now read it in itemized list form, the exact same text, but this will include any comments that come to light. Number one, soul and spirit being one, God and soul are one, and this one never included in a limited mind or a limited body. Science and Health is divided into two sections, Science and Health and Key to the Scriptures. The first 13 chapters give the detail of Christian Science, and chapter 14 is a recapitulation. Those 14 chapters comprise Science and Health. The second part of the textbook is Key to the Scriptures, and those are chapters 15 through 18. So chapter 14 being recapitulation is basically a summary of chapters 1 through 13 in 24 question and answer format. They begin on page 465, and the very first definition is the definition of God. And it states, incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. So the definition of God includes seven synonymous terms of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And then there are four words that are like adjectives that describe all of those seven, which are incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite. So everything about those seven terms are incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. Those are the characteristics that are inherent within those seven synonymous terms, which really means the seven qualities, seven primary qualities of God. Soul is the third one. Spirit is the second one. And if there were one word to describe spirit, of course there's thousands of words, but it would be the term substance. And if there's two words that would verify what exactly is soul, it would be spiritual sense. Really, the word sense, but it's spiritual because all substance is spirit. Now, that chapter 14, where it described, gave one of the definitions of God, on 465, and on 466, the very next page, is this question: what are spirits and souls? I shall read it so that we can get an idea of just how important understanding those two terms are, because she places it on the second page that summarizes the first 13 chapters of the textbook. Here's what she says about it. What are spirits and souls? Now, the topic is entitled Real versus Unreal. What are spirits and souls? Answer: to human belief, they are personalities constituted of mind and matter, life and death, truth and error, good and evil. But these contrasting pairs of terms represent contraries, as Christian Science reveals, which neither dwell together nor assimilate. Truth is immortal. Error is mortal. Truth is limitless. Error is limited. Truth is intelligent. Error is non-intelligent. Moreover, truth is real and error is unreal. This last statement contains the point you will most reluctantly admit, although first and last, it is the most important to understand. I shall repeat that last sentence to which this refers. Truth is real and error is unreal. And remember, the title to this entire question and topic is Real versus Unreal. Mankind Redeemed is the title to the next part of this explanation of souls and spirits. The term souls or spirits is as improper as the term gods. Soul or spirit, and that's singular and capitalized, signifies deity and nothing else. There is no finite soul nor spirit, and that's the lowercase. Capitalized soul or spirit means only one mind, and that's capitalized, and cannot be rendered in the plural. Heathen mythology and Jewish theology have perpetuated the fallacy that intelligence, soul, and life can be in matter, and those are all lowercase, of course, and idolatry and ritualism are the outcome of all man-made beliefs. The science of Christianity comes with fan in hand to separate the chaff from the wheat. Science will declare God a right, and Christianity will demonstrate this declaration and its divine principle, and that's a capital P, making mankind better physically, morally, and spiritually. That explains very vividly from beginning to end the difference between the real and the unreal, or in terms of spirit and soul, the difference between spirit and soul with a capital S, which means deity, which means God, and the lowercase, and they have S's on them because they're plural. Spirits and souls. So that's the obvious unreality. And spirit and soul capitalized and singular means God. So that is the real. The planks are very condensed, So it is up to each one individually to explore anything that is used as a concept within the planks. And that's why we went to a more full explanation from chapter 14 on spirit and soul, which are used as the topic here, where it says soul and spirit one. Point number two, spirit is eternal divine. Now, how can spirit be eternal? Think about its opposite. Its opposite is matter. And you'll recall that it was mentioned that if there were one word to describe spirit, it would be substance. So if the real substance, the only substance that exists, is spirit, and there can only be one, because there's only one God, and God is omnipresent. So there can't be any opposing substance, and also God is omnipotent. So there is no other substance that could have any power, which is the power of mind, behind it. So it's eternal because there is nothing that can stop it. There is nothing that gives it finiteness, because it is infinite. As mentioned in the definition of God, incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite. So everything about God reflects those four qualities. Now, divine means perfect. No flaws. And as a matter of fact, spirit is defined by the word flawless. Matter, on the other hand, is totally flawed. Again, they're opposites. Point number three. Nothing but spirit, soul, can evolve life. For spirit is more than all else. So in other words, life cannot be composed of anything that is contrary to spirit. So matter's out of the question. There can't be any material life. There can only be a false concept of the true life, the life which is God. Before Mary Baker Eddy went around the corner where she couldn't be seen anymore as a visible figure, her last words, which she wrote on a notepad by her bed, God is my life. She made it very clear that she was depending on her life to continue ad infinitum. Jesus ascended above the belief of a material universe, above the belief of a material body. Mary Baker Eddy is claiming the same truth about herself. Not about a so-called invisible body, but it was basically restating the message, the spiritual message, in Genesis chapter 1, beginning with verse 26, where it says, "And let us make man out of our image and likeness." So God made man out of his image and out of his likeness. Some Bibles say, and after his likeness. We, as an idea of God, are not a physical body that has a physical origin made out of matter. Our life is independent of what the false view of what God is and what he revealed, and as stated in Genesis chapter 1. Which do we want to adhere to? A life that is incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite, and eternal, or one that is finite with all kinds of troubles all the time? We must claim the life that is God, the manifestation of God as God's idea, perfect man. That's what Jesus lived. He lived that prayer. He lived that statement. He didn't agree to anything less than perfect God, perfect man, living in perfect heaven. And of course, heaven is a state of consciousness, and that's why it's omnipresent. It's available to us. Are we going to peek underneath the rock and let the light shine so we can see the truth about what Genesis 1 states about ourselves, you, me, and everyone? When Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment of all, by one of the Pharisees who thought they would trick him because there are so many commandments that they created out of the Ten Commandments. They apparently didn't live them, but they certainly did like to talk. Jesus' reply was, as the greatest commandment, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Isn't the message Jesus is giving to us, forget about trying to love God if you don't love your neighbor? And if you don't wish upon your neighbor the same thing you would like to receive, which of course is heaven and harmony, living in perfect heaven with a perfect God and perfect man, being perfect man. If that's what we want, we have to open our consciousness to that possibility, and we have to claim it, and we have to live the qualities. Then we can be experiencing what it states in Genesis chapter 1 that God revealed to us. It's not new. Truth has no beginning and no end. How could truth have a beginning? It would have an end. Can truth actually have an end? No. Truth is a winner all the time because its opposite is what is finite. Truth is eternal. Doesn't change, doesn't deviate. It is always true. Point number 4. Because soul, and that's a capital S, is immortal, it does not exist in mortality. Now we must recall that soul means sense, and because the only substance is spirit, then soul really means spiritual sense. Mary Baker Eddy gives us some very interesting statements about spiritual senses. Richard Oakes did a very wonderful thing along with the Carpenters, and that is preserved volumes of books which are Mary Baker Eddy's writings, but she did not publish. One of the books to which I refer to right now about the five spiritual senses is titled The Blue Book. They had a very simplistic thought about titles because it included so many different topics. So several books were written which were in separate colors, and one of them is The Blue Book, the color of the outside cover, And on page 222, he repeats what Mary Baker Eddy stated about the five spiritual senses. The definition. 1. Sight. Spiritual discernment. 2. Hearing. Spiritual understanding. 3. Feeling. Divine consciousness. 4. Smell. Intuition of character. And 5. Taste. Relish of truth. That's on page 222 of the Blue Book. And pages 222 to 227 give us further explanation. So you're welcome to go to the website, mbeinstitute.org, and search for Oakes, O-A-K-E-S, as the author, and you can read all about it. But when we think about vision, or sight, or seeing, think about the definition of God on page 578. She says, God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. So the second topic, that God is all-seeing, she lays it on the line. If we want to really see what's really going on in the world of God, we must be using spiritual discernment. Discernment simply means being able to tell the difference between one thing and another. And of course, if we're talking about spiritual, then we have to tell the difference between spirit and matter, spiritual and material. Are we looking for what is perfect? Mary Baker Eddy prayed every hour to make sure that that's exactly what she was doing. She was attacked by everyone all the time, as was Jesus. What did she do about it? How did she respond? Very simply. She made sure, by reminding herself on an hourly basis, that she better be thinking and talking and acting, and talking would probably be mentally to herself, and acting only as would the purity of the substance of spirit respond in a flawless nature, enveloping every thought, speech, and action with love. Perfect love. Not be concerned about the suggestions of mortal mind that is looking for a body to express itself. And that's exactly what mortal mind does. It operates on deceit and decoys and lies, unreality from beginning to end. So are we going to let it enter into our house, which is our consciousness? Or are we going to deny it entrance and make the bold statement that it is not true, it is not real, and it cannot exist? Frederick L. Rawson, one of the true genius Christian scientists, that we should demonstrate everything mentally so that we don't have to do anything with a so-called physical body. He proved that in his work. He, along with two others that we know of, had 15-minute appointments. And at the end of the 15 minutes, the patient was healed. The other two are Joel Goldsmith and Wentworth Winslow. And of course, Jesus had instantaneous healings continuously, as did Mary Baker Eddy. Wentworth Winslow raised a boy from the dead, and Joel Goldsmith was called into a Christian Science nursing home to help a patient because of a problem she had. And when he arrived, the receptionist said, "You can't go in there." He said, "Why not?" "Because everybody has a contagious disease in the whole building." There were several hundred people. He said, "Well, you only have one problem. There is only one problem here to be concerned with, to deal with, to take care of, and to solve." With that, he went over and sat down in a quiet area of the reception room. And in a few minutes, the nurses started coming out. They said, "What happened? Everyone is healed, all at the same time." Joel Goldsmith had done his work. Truth healed, and he's the one that provided the channel. Picknell Young was drowned. After he was drowned, and he could see that a lot of people were looking over his physicality, he had a conversation with himself. He said, "Do I want to go back? Are there things that I can do to help humanity? Or should I go on?" The thought was very strong that yes, he could do things to help humanity. So he snapped out of it and came back to life. And he was one of the best practitioners ever. He's one of the people that when people came to him with business problems, he found that most of them didn't even know how to run a business. And they were expecting, because they were following Christian Science to some degree, that there would be miracles that could take place. There's a science in everything that we do that is worthwhile. If you're going to run a business, you need to know the science of running the business. You need to learn everything there is to know. You need to be able to understand the function of every department. These people didn't understand the basics of business. So he sent them back outside his office. He said, "Go learn how to run a business." If we're going to do something, we must strive for excellence. Do you enjoy playing tennis? You should take tennis lessons continuously. You play the piano? Take lessons continuously. If you're going to study Christian Science, you better continuously study the words. Look up every single word that you don't know. Tear it apart and put it back together. Using your own words, making sure that you're not varying from the original text in concept. Whatever you do, you better be serious about it. Richard Strain was at the end of his rope. Normally we don't mention people's names in particular, but he is on the website and has testimonies about this. So that's why it was mentioned, so you could find him and read about it if you'd like. Strain, Strain, Richard Strain. He was at the end of his rope. He was away from home 18 hours a day, exhausted when he got home. Then he went out for another 18 hours after being home 6 hours to take care of whatever he could do in 6 hours. He had been in Christian Science And he thought that would be the solution, but he didn't even know where to begin. So he went to a practitioner. He told her the problem. He felt like he was in a rut, just going around in a circle, not making any progress. Didn't know what to do. She said, "When do you study?" It was an easy answer, but he was ashamed to say it. It was N-O-N-E. She had a very quick response. If you don't study 5 hours a day, don't expect to work out your problem in Christian Science. That's all she said. So he's sitting there wondering, how in the world is he going to do this? And, you know, 5 hours a day, that would give him 1 hour to do everything else. You know, I suppose he'd cleaned up and probably ate dinner, slept, prepared for the next day, probably grabbed breakfast, and out the door. So where's the 5 hours going to come from? She didn't tell him. She didn't ask him. She just told him the facts. Everything we do, we better take seriously. Do we expect to have a better life? Then we better study how to do it. Let me read to you something that is in the textbook. It's on page 128, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. The title is Practical Science. The term science, properly understood, refers only to the laws of God and to His government of the universe, inclusive of man. From this it follows that businessmen and cultured scholars have found that Christian Science enhances their endurance and mental powers, enlarges their perception of character, gives them acuteness and comprehensiveness, and an ability to exceed their ordinary capacity. The human mind, imbued with this spiritual understanding, becomes more elastic, is capable of greater endurance, escapes somewhat from itself, and requires less repose. A knowledge of the science of being develops the latent abilities and possibilities of man. It extends the atmosphere of thought, giving mortals access to broader and higher realms. It raises the thinker into his native air of insight and perspicacity. Is that an incentive for you to get serious about studying the textbook? If that doesn't do enough, read the last 101 pages of the textbook, from page 600 to 700 inclusive. There are 85 different individuals that gave testimonies about 486 things they were healed of, and most of them only went to Christian Science because they had been given up by the medical profession. And there was one thing in particular that they were looking to heal. And they healed five other things that they weren't even thinking about was a problem. But it was. Everything was healed because they got their thought off of the problem, because they were serious about learning what Christian Science was all about and could it improve their life. Because they were not happy with the life they had. Mathematics has 10 digits, 0 through 9. Yes, 0 is a digit. If we multiply something by 0, we get zero. If we add zero to something, we end up with the same thing we had before we took the zero and added it in. Zero is considered a digit. And there's four operators: add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And it doesn't matter whether your name is John Brown or Bill Robinson or whoever. If you know how mathematics operates, you will get the same answer as every other single person in all existence will get, if they know how it operates and they apply it correctly. It doesn't change. 2 + 3 is always 5. 13 times 13 is always 169. 144, the square root, is always 12. Nothing changes if we understand how it works and we do it correctly. Christian Science always works if we understand how it works and apply it correctly. Mary Baker Eddy makes this very important statement on page 146, an affiliated statement on page 330. She says on page 146, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Disease? What does that mean? Anything that is dis-ease, anything that is discordant. Sin, sickness, disease, death, or anything in between. Any relationship, any topic at all that is not in absolute perfect harmony with God. On page 330, she says this: when the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. 32 planks. The letter and the spirit. The letter is what we're talking about in this prayer treatment. And we're talking about specifically plank number 19 of the 32. What do you think she means by the spirit? Get out of here. I never want to see you again. Or could we say, I believe we have differences of opinion that can't be resolved at this time. Let's part company right now, and maybe either one or both of us will have a different view at a later time. I don't know, but it doesn't seem right that we work together on this project at the moment. Is there any difference in the spirit? Is one done with consideration and preserving the dignity of each one and being humble that maybe we have the wrong view and not be so bold that it has to be the other person that is wrong? The spirit means that we are always going to let love guide us in thought, speech, and action. Love means nurturing. Are we going to nurture the qualities of mind, the qualities of spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? That's what love is. It is nurturing. It's a mother that is nurturing her babe. Our babe is our thoughts. Our nurturing is making sure that we are striving to have a better and better understanding. Mary Baker Eddy stated that infinite progression is concrete being. Concrete was, I believe, a symbol, as she stated it here, of permanence. What is permanent about the infinite? Progress. It goes on and on and on and on. We never get there, but we're striving to see more and more of it. Infinite progression is concrete being. Regression has nothing to do with concrete being, has nothing to do with Christian Science, has nothing to do with living life's qualities of God. What are we going to do? So, are we going to study to learn the mechanics of how everything works together? Christian Science is not any different than mathematics. You have to learn how it operates. Look at the ones that were the most successful in Christian Science or divine metaphysics, which really means the same thing. You better check out Christ Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, Frederick L. Rawson, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, Bicknell Young. People that were successful cultivated a life of giving everything they had, devoting their entire life to helping others. Can we do that? What should you be alert to all the time? Serving mankind. Frederick L. Rawson says our duty and our goal for existing should be to make other people happy. How are we going to do that? By being humble and serving them. Keep alert to people that are in need and see how we can participate to help solve it. Don't just give them a hand out, but look for ways we can give them a hand up. Don't give them a fish and forget it. Teach them how to fish. That's what Jesus did with his disciples. After he raised himself from the crucifixion, he saw that they immediately, they didn't even take the weekend off. They immediately, after he was crucified, went out fishing. They didn't catch a thing. What did he tell them? Cast your net on the right side. And they had abundance. What was the right side? The spiritual side. Are we going to look for spiritual solutions? Are we going to live the life of spirit? We have innumerable opportunities, innumerable, total, numbers that don't end. If we go into a store, do we appreciate the clerk? Do we express gratitude? Do we say thank you? If they have a smile, do we compliment them on it? If they don't, then we should be even more alert and say, I certainly wish you a beautiful day. Do we see someone trying to lift something up and it's a little too heavy, and so we give them a hand? Do we have someone that doesn't have a grocery cart? And maybe we just got ours, and we give it to them, and then we go find another one for us. We can't be a sucker. The wealthiest man in the world right now, everyone knows who he is. He started the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. And for 6 months, he had his best programmers find billions, if not trillions, of dollars that were being put in the trash, not used for its intended purpose. He found that when he investigated nonprofit organizations that were using taxpayer dollars to fund their operation, that between 95 and 100% of the money they received from donations and from our tax dollars never went for the intended purpose. It was a money laundering operation. Therefore, if you think giving money to a charity is the way to be a giver, you are probably going to be totally disappointed if you really find out the facts. Because almost everyone out there is a 100% sham. And the ones he researched, between 95 and 100% of the money was stolen by the people running the organization and all of the other people that were related that were, you know, that funneled money into it. We have to use the intelligence of mind in everything we do. And giving money away is no exception to it. Right now they have this pathetic ad by UNICEF, UNICEF. It's supposed to be a nonprofit organization, and they give pathetic videos. They show you pathetic videos about children that are so skinny that you can see they're starving to death. Do they get any benefit from a donation you make? Not likely. The Red Cross is totally corrupt. Almost every church does no good for their audience. The bigger the church, the more the money laundering operation is. We have to be intelligent in everything we're doing. I was taking a flight. It was an early morning flight. I don't know, it was like in the middle of the night. I don't know, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. Well, actually, that's not in the middle, but it was a very early flight. And so I decided that I would go to a hotel that was right there at the airport the night before. And after I got checked in and everything, I wanted to go out and get a bite to eat, walk around, a little exercise. And as soon as I walked out of the hotel, a man approached me. And the hotel was at an off-ramp. And he said, my car's up there at the top of the off-ramp and I have a flat tire. Would you give me $50 so I could go down here to the tire store and buy a tire? I said, well, let's go up and take a look at the car. No, he didn't want to do that. There was no car. There was no flat tire. It was a scam. He thought he'd make a fast $50, and he probably was doing it all night long. I did the right thing to do and went in and reported it to the hotel. I said, the people that come into your hotel or walk around your hotel, there's a fellow outside that's scamming them. You may want to do something about it. 200 or 300 years ago, there was a quote, and it's credited to Thomas Burke, and it said, evil triumphs when good men do nothing. And if we read between the lines, give it a little embellishment, it probably means that people that know there's something that is wrong, that needs to be exposed and corrected, and you need to do something about it to fix it, but you don't. You don't do anything. You just are passive. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. Evil can't triumph if people that know there's a problem do something about it. Are we going to do anything about any problems that we know about? or are we going to be passive? At the last election, they had teams of people that had an organized way to find out the facts about the people that were running for office and the ones in your area you could be active in doing something to assist them getting elected. And the ones that were alert could see that there was a lot of problems going on of fraud. And some of them reported it. Some of them made videos. And as a result, there's things being done about it. Are we going to just let evil pursue and do nothing about it? Mary Baker Eddy wrote a chapter in the book, chapter 5, called Animal Magnetism Unmasked. She couldn't get the first edition of Science and Health published because she had not written that chapter. And it just sat there with the publisher. He didn't know why, but he didn't feel he should publish it. And finally it came to her that she needed to write that chapter. As soon as she had it finished, she got on the train and went to where the publisher was. And in one of the train stations in between where they were changing trains, she met the publisher. And he was on the way to her. He said, I don't know why I didn't publish this, but I just didn't feel that it was right to do. There was something missing. And so I was going to bring you the transcript that I had printed so far, and hopefully you would know what was missing. And she said, here it is. I was missing a very important chapter that needed to be in there. If we think something isn't complete, there's something holding up progress, have we thought about the possibility that we're missing something that needs to be included in what we're doing? The phrase is very common that God does things in His time, not ours. I would like to take a differing opinion or an expanded view of that to say that if what we're doing isn't coming to fruition, have we examined everything to make sure nothing is missing? Because when all of the pieces fit together, the fruition is there. So if we're trying to see a conclusion before it's mature and complete, then we're going to be disappointed. So we have to go back to the drawing board and see, okay, have I got this covered, this covered, this covered? And of course, if you study the system of divine metaphysics, it boils down to 7 synonymous terms and 4 operators. I mentioned the 4 operators of mathematics. The 4 operators in the system of divine metaphysics are the word, which is knowing the facts about God and how it applies to what we're doing. The Christ is the second operator, and it means no matter what comes our way, are we doing what Jesus did and translated into spiritual terms? And number 3 is Christianity, which means are we living the life of what we know about God, and are we sure we're looking at the spiritual reality? And if so, we should put together the algorithm that will bring the fruition. But we've got to get our thought off of the fruition and think about the learning process. Most people are overwhelmed by the problem. And until we get our thought off of the problem and onto the facts about God and translating it into spiritual terms, we're probably never going to get to the healing. And the less we think about the problem, the faster we will get to the healing. And it'll be natural, and we probably may not even know when it occurs. Someone that has a vision problem, they don't even think about it, but they don't put their glasses on. And they just read. And at some time later, they realize, oh, I'm not wearing glasses anymore. Frederick L. Rawson, one of the several reasons to consider him a genius, he overcame the belief of time. He could heal with the healing being effective. Of course, truth is the healer. But the healing would come about effective as soon as the individual realized there was a problem. Retroactive healing. Healing back in time. We have it all covered on the website, mbeinstitute.org, under the author, Frederick L. Rawson, Rawson. He wrote a book called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. In it, he has a chapter called Applied Treatment. There are 1,315 different items that are listed as ailments, problems, friction, conflict, discomfort, disease. And with each one, he gives a very short description of the problem. I mean, very short. Could be three or four words or one sentence, two sentences. And then he says what we need to do is flat out say, there is no, and then describe the problem in as few words as possible. Could be one word, two words, a broken arm, for example, or one word, accident. And then he gives you the spiritual solution that we need to focus on. And that's what Mary Baker Eddy says. She says we have to find the evil at its source. You know, don't bite on a decoy. Don't focus on a symptom. But the underlying evil. And with evil operating in deceit and decoys, like a magician that says, look over here, when the real problem is over there. So, that's the way the entire chapter of Applied Treatment is. So no matter what your ailment is, you'll probably find it listed in there. But he suggests, and we here at the Mary Baker Eddy Institute back it up 1,000%, do not read the chapter from beginning to end, because it's only going to instill 1,315 different problems in your thought. Only look at what is the problem and study that. Utilize it. Put it in your own words. But don't be looking at the page before it and the page after it, or any other page in the book. Unless within the suggestions that it tells you, also see this other one that is related, then you would do it. Otherwise, you only look at what's on that page. We know of no one else that's been able to heal back in time. But he tells us how to do it. What else do we have here? Well, I think we've covered everything, but let me read the last three. Okay, the first one says, because soul is immortal, it does not exist in mortality. And I believe we covered that when we read the section on spirits and souls. And we definitely covered the next one. It says, soul must be incorporeal to be spirit, for spirit is not finite. Definition of God covers that. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And the last one is, only by losing the false sense of soul, with a capital S, can we gain the eternal unfolding of life, as immortality brought to light. And we talked about infinite progression as concrete being, and about life being eternal. And the only reason it's eternal is because it's of the substance of spirit, which is the opposite of matter. John L. Sinton, was a very advanced Christian Scientist, and he has three thoughts on this. Let me just read it. Well, the first one is obvious, soul and spirit, one, because that's just repeating the title. Number two, these are synonymous. In other words, spirit and soul. And the text shows that spirit and soul cannot be in a limited mind or a limited body, nor in mortality. And so we discussed that in detail, that God is infinite. Therefore, the substance, which is spirit, is omnipresent. And soul, which is spiritual sense, is the only real sense. And the last one is, once this is seen and accepted, the way opens for scientific translation. By losing the false sense of soul and gaining the eternal unfolding of life. And we discussed that in detail because the second of the four operators is Christ, and that is translation. That is translating from the material visible to the spiritual real. And that reminds me that we didn't really talk about the fourth operator, and that is science. So it's the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And if we've been successful in healing, that means we understand Christianity, that we are living the science. And so science means that we are at the level of ascending above the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. We automatically translate whatever we're faced with so that we recognize that it has no power. And like Mr. Rawson suggests, just say, there is no. You know, make it very straightforward and emphatic, with conviction, and then explain the reason why. And this is all automatic when we're in science, because science is the automatic translation so that we are only seeing perfection, as Mary Baker Eddy practiced every hour of the day. Self-examination to make sure, no matter what appears to be wrong, what discord seems to be surrounding anything, whether it's us, someone else, an event, a government, whatever, that we're going to focus on the perfection that is the true facts about God. And that atmosphere will bring forth anything that needs to be handled, and it'll probably automatically dissolve it. But we have to keep our thought up there at the top. Wentworth Winslow got a telegram. This was probably 100 years ago. And it said, 6 treatments, please. It was from South America. He lived in New York. Apparently, they didn't have telephone available at the time. Like I said, it was probably 100 years ago or more. So he had only one thing that he could think of to do. He couldn't uncover the evil in a specific way, which Mary Baker Eddy encourages us to do. So he had to approach it differently. And he was getting a better and better understanding that purity eradicates impurity. So he decided, kind of like Mary Baker Eddy in her hourly prayer treatments, he decided that every thought, speech, and action was going to be filtered, so that he was only taking the absolute highest road that he had the understanding to be able to take. all day long. And after some period of time doing this, he got another telegram that said, 6 more treatments, please. And he said to himself, this is what comes to me that I need to continue to do. So he did. Sometime later, he got a third telegram. And it said, your first 6 treatments healed the individual. It was a belief of insanity. But no one around him believed he was healed. So I sent the second telegram. And now I'm here to tell you, or I'm telling you, they're still, several thousand miles apart. He said, now I want to report that he was healed, and everyone around him, they had their thought healed so they could accept it. And I'm so grateful for everything you did. Our thoughts rest on everyone around us. And if we are doing good things, it projects out into the atmosphere of goodness. If we're doing evil things, it projects out into the atmosphere of evil. Which one do we want to support? Which one do we want others to tune into and be benefited? Mary Baker Eddy says, the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. I don't recall offhand whether I mentioned it in this treatment, but I read recently that a fellow said, now, when you go around the corner, that's my embellishment, when you pass on, in most people's terminology, the only thing you can take with you is everything you've given away. And what you have to leave behind is everything you've taken. Do you realize what that's saying? What is that telling us? And that's exactly Christian Science talking. That's exactly Christ Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, talking. That's the truth talking. That's Genesis 1 talking. That's the God of Abraham and Jacob and Isaac talking to us. That's St. John talking to us. Paul talking to us. It's not the nonprofit organizations that are skimming everything off the top so there's nothing underneath left. That is the truth talking to us. What is the first quote at the beginning of the textbook? There are 3 introductory quotes. The first one says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Those are words of Jesus, recorded by John. The second quote is by Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And the third quote is by Mary Baker Eddy. And she says, oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Are we searching for the truth? We will be set free of everything that's not true. Which means we're going to be in the realm of the perfect God, perfect man, perfect heaven. Are we going to be thinking about money, houses, cars, being famous? Are we going to think about what Jesus told the man that asked him about eternal life? He said, good master, how shall I obtain eternal life? The fellow was a very wealthy tax collector. He must have been doing some skimming also, money laundering. Because Jesus said, first of all, Jesus said, why call me thou good? He said, there's none good but God. And what's the definition of good on page 578 in the glossary of the textbook, which is part of the Key to the Scriptures? It defines good, G-O-O-D, as God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence and omniaction. And omniscience, of course, is all science, and that includes omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. So what is left out? If you think about the other two definitions of God and then the definition of good, which is also God, there's nothing left out. God is everything that is real, and that includes God's manifestation. If God didn't have a manifestation, he couldn't be God because there would be nothing to be a God of. And if the manifestation didn't have a God, they couldn't exist because there has to be a God to be a manifestation of the source. So what do we have to leave behind? Everything that is not sourced from God. Is physicality sourced from God? Or spirituality? We can take everything that's spiritual, and we have to leave behind everything that is material. So are you going to focus on developing your spirituality or amassing material things? We know that life in physical form is finite, but if we study the system of divine metaphysics, we will get a better and better understanding that life is eternal. And it says that in the Bible. That means it cannot be in a physical body. A fellow had three sons, and he was mature. So he decided it was time to give his assets to his sons. He had a vast amount of land. He had one of the most beautiful houses that had ever been built. And he had a library that had the wealth of knowledge that was not equaled by anyone else or any other library. So he gave them each a piece of paper. And he said, you go think about which one of the three things you want. And if two or all three of you want the same thing, then we'll have to sell everything and divide up the money. And he said, think about it for a week and then we'll get together. And don't talk to anybody about what you're thinking about and don't tell anybody about what you write down on the piece of paper. So they met a week later, and he asked the oldest son, he said, what is your choice? He said, I'd like to take the land. It'll always be here. The second son says, I'd like to take the house. It's a great house. I always have some place to sleep, and I can have parties. I can just live a life of Riley here. And each time they were worried about what the other one wanted because they didn't know. But believe it or not, the third one wanted the library because he handed the papers to the father. So nobody knew what the other one wanted. And the father opened the bump one at a time. And he said, son, why did you want the library? And he repeated what the first two sons said and why they wanted them. He said, because Dad, I can gain knowledge from the library, and nobody can take that away from me. Nobody. A house can burn down. You can have an earthquake destroy some of the land, or an army could come here and take it over. And you've always got maintenance you got to do on the house. No, I would rather learn what is valuable to know and use that in living my life. Are we going to do that? Are we going to cultivate to learn everything we can about God and about God's manifestation, which is man? I read to you about what it says earlier in this prayer treatment from page 128, Practical Science. Businessmen and culture scholars have found that Christian Science enhances their endurance and mental powers, enlarges their perception of character, gives them acuteness and comprehensiveness, and an ability to exceed their ordinary capacity. And it goes on and on as I read it to you. Are we going to pursue something that will give that to us? Are we going to learn something where we forget all about the problem? because we're so involved in learning more about God and find that the problem disappears because of our spiritual advancement and our spiritual growth in understanding about what is real and what is not? Kurt Russell was asked, "How does your character differ from the part you play in the movies?" He's a lifelong actor. He started when he was a boy. He's probably has more years acting than almost anyone else. He said, "Acting is a fantasy. The characters that I play, that's all fantasy land. My life is what's real." Are we living a life that is fantasy land? There was an actor. He was so ill, he had to hobble to the play. This was years ago before they had movies. This is in Science and Health. And he would sit there aching in his chair until his cue was called. As soon as they called his cue, he jumped up out of his chair and walked up there sprightly and played his part. And you would think he was the youngest actor in the whole group. He had a part to play, and he wasn't going to let anything interfere with him. Nothing. And then when it was all over, he went back to this other fantasy land of living a fake life. So it's the opposite of what Kurt Russell was saying. Kurt Russell was saying being on stage is a fantasy. This fellow acted like he was really a child of God when he was on stage. And when he was not on stage, he was acting like he had all kinds of problems. He needs to flip it. Just like Kurt Russell realizes, your life, that's reality. If we're following divine metaphysics, the example of Jesus, the example of Mary Baker Eddy, the example of Joel Goldsmith and Wentworth Winslow and Frederick L. Rassen, Bicknell Young, others that were very advanced in Christian Science, then we're going to be living the life of God. We're going to be living as it states in Genesis chapter 1 about man, made in God's image and likeness. And you know what else it says in Genesis chapter 1? It says God gave man dominion over everything on the earth, under the earth, in the waters, in the air, everything gave man dominion. Why? Because God gave man the ability to reflect his intelligence, his wisdom, his knowing, his creative ability, infinite capacity and capability and functionality, all being of the substance of spirit. And our ability to identify is of the substance of spirit and spiritual senses. And the principle that we know about and learn about is a principle based on spirit with a perfect structure, a system designed by mind, always in balance, always harmonious, self-operating, a life that is eternal. Because it's based on spiritual activities. It's based on living the qualities of God. Truth to keep us on track with a pure motive. Always giving us the guideline. Never fails. Always there, no deviation, because it's perfect. And then there's love, which nurtures all of those to fulfillment and makes sure that every little bit of friction is totally dissolved, which it does automatically. It's the eternal lubricant. No noise when two gears come together because there's no friction. No clanging noise as in chaos but the harmony of divine principle. We have a choice to make every moment of the day. And Mary Baker Eddy says the difference between success and failure is how we use our moments. There's 1,440 minutes. There's a zillion moments, because a moment is defined as the smallest measurement of time. You can't divide it because it's already the smallest. So there's an unlimited number of moments a day. How are we using them? Are we thinking in a spiritual manner in all the thinking we do? Are we letting the mind of God be our thinking? Our intelligence? Or are we struggling with this problem and that problem? Solutions usually come to us when we get our thought off of the problem and think about something unrelated that is harmonious. Are we going to focus on the problem? Einstein says you cannot solve a problem if you're working on the same level as where the problem appeared. He says curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. He said that science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. What is Christian Science? What is divine metaphysics? The topic of this prayer treatment. It is exactly having science with religion and having religion with science. That is Christian Science. That is divine metaphysics. And we teach you all about it step by step. I shall close by reading or reciting the scientific statement of being, which makes it clear exactly what this plank number 19 is all about. Soul and spirit one. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind, and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. Right now, it is 8:18 in the morning on Tuesday, January 6, 2025. And the title to this plank number 19 is Soul and Spirit One. Thank you for listening. The end.